It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show. Are you approaching retirement, or maybe you've just changed jobs? If so, you'll probably now have control of your 401k or IRA. Would you like to buy some property, notes, loans, start a new business, or even buy crypto? You can with a self-directed IRA. For more than a decade, I've been telling you about setting up a self-directed IRA through IRA Advantage. And while you may now hear other companies say they offer self-directed IRAs, you need to find out if they're truly self-directed. With a truly self-directed retirement account, you can make any investment the law allows. Whether you're talking about true diversification, starting your new business, or investing in private holdings, IRA Advantage through a truly self-directed IRA can make that happen. Take it from me, Lars. You've worked hard for your money. IRA Advantage will work hard to keep it yours.
Would you like to learn more about truly self-directed IRAs? Then visit IRAAdvantage.com. View our videos and call IRA Advantage. That's IRAAdvantage.com.
Maybe you'd have told me a year ago I could run City Hall from my couch. I'd have said, no way.
That is embattled Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who looks very, very likely to lose her run for re-election. And this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, proud to be supplying the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And if you want to jump into the conversation with me, why, I'm always glad to make that happen. At 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers, you always go right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can, you can also vote in our Twitter poll. Does any state have the right to revoke your rights as a parent to make decisions for your kids? And if you wonder, why are you asking me that? Well, on Friday last, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill that allows the state of California to revoke out-of-state parents' rights over trans kids. The legislation allows California, in theory, although I have a feeling this is going to get tested in court very quickly, to take, quote, temporary emergency jurisdiction over a child that travels to the state for transgender drugs or surgical operations and strips parents of their authority. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. I mean, I don't know what the current cost of a bus or an Amtrak ticket from Seattle or Portland or Eugene all the way into California, but if your kid gets on a train or a bus, or if they've got a few extra dollars on an airplane and they go to California and they say, my parents don't know about this, but I'm a boy and I want to become a girl, or I'm a girl and I'd like to become a boy and I'd like to have the surgery, I'd like to have the drugs. The state of California has taken it upon itself to say that it can revoke your rights as a parent, that you've got nothing to say about it. Now, I think that question kind of answers itself. Does any state have a right to revoke your rights as a parent and make decisions like that, that are permanent and lifelong? Do they have the right to do that? I don't think they do. I'm going to answer no. You can answer any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for your business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I want to get back to cop-hating, racist-hater Joanne Hardesty and her soon-to-be-delivered pink slip down at Portland City Hall. But I want to talk about where things are going right and where they're going wrong in both Oregon and in Washington, and which of the three women currently running the race for Oregon governor is most likely to win. The latest on the Oregonian poll shows that the race between incumbent Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who led the effort to defund police but is a whole lot more quiet about it these days, and her challenger, Mr. Rene Gonzalez, can be seen 50% for Gonzalez, 26% for a sitting member of the Portland City Council. Now, what does that tell you about where people think things are going? And that's just one of the reasons, one of the litmus tests I've been using as to why Christine Drazen, the Republican governor candidate, is winning, and both the Democrat and the independent candidates, Kotek and Johnson, are not. Last week, the Oregonian, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, ran a poll that found that among the candidates, Tina Kotek supporters say 57% of Kotek backers, the ones who plan to vote for Tina Kotek, say the state of Oregon is on the right track. Now, I just gave you evidence that in the state's biggest city in Portland, apparently the voters do not think the current decisions made by the current city council are right. And I would think that most reasonable people would take a look at all the ugly things that are going on in Oregon or in Washington, in Portland or in Seattle, and they would say, this is not going the way it's supposed to be going. In fact, even Tina Kotek has said, after a weekend of violence, and I'll get to the details on that in a moment, this level of violence is unacceptable. As governor, I won't sit back as crime rises. I will work with local law enforcement and fight to get illegal guns off our streets. Well, guns aren't the biggest part of the problem. But 57% of her supporters say Oregon's on the right track. And by the way, when she says she'll work with the cops, 2 years ago, she was condemning the cops. She was condemning the cops, along with Joanne Hardesty, who was condemning the cops. And look how her reelection bid is going. Drug overdose deaths have now hit new highs in the Pacific Northwest. Only Kotek refuses to condemn the effects of voter-approved legalization of hard drugs in ballot measure 110. Both Drazen and Betsy Johnson have called for repeal of that voter-passed initiative. In Portland, four deaths by violence in 24 hours this past weekend. And in Seattle, the same kind of violence is going on. When police arrived, they found four people had been shot. Police say the victim's injuries were not life-threatening. One of the victims had to use his belt as a tourniquet. But let's get back to Portland City Hall, because I think it's a great litmus test for the state. Down at Portland City Hall, Mayor and Police Commissioner Feckless Ted Wheeler literally laughed at one woman who made a heartfelt appeal, telling commissioners she's seeing so much violence in her neighborhood that people living near her are literally moving away. And she is both frightened and angry. And then Mayor Ted Wheeler made national news this weekend when he literally laughed at the woman. Listen to what happened.
I'm angry and I'm sad and I'm fed up. And I'm so sick of how having politicians pander to a woke agenda that's been nothing short of an epic failure. Please admit the failure and start doing the right thing. Stop wasting our money and destroying our beautiful city. And please start being leaders. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. You made your point emphatically clear. Thank you for being here and sharing your perspective. We do appreciate it.
I don't think they appreciate it at all. And how does that woman who testified by Zoom and whose comments were caught, who was laughed at by the mayor of Portland, how does she see her treatment by the elected leadership of Portlandia?
Like I said before, I think that it proves my point that I don't feel like they're taking it seriously and that they care. And the way he laughed, like, you know what? I don't think this is funny at all, Christina. And this is a nightmare. And Portland is in real trouble and we don't feel safe.
You see the businesses that are moving away from Portland. You saw businesses, even big ones like Amazon, that have abandoned parts of Seattle. And why? Because of the dangers and because the folks in charge don't give a damn. Joanne Hardesty talked about running the city from her couch. Actually, I kind of thought she could run Portland City Hall from a slot machine row at the A&A Casino with a cold one in her hand. Turns out that didn't work so well because TriMet, the bus system, doesn't run that late at night, and Lyft drivers are insufficiently deferential to cranky passengers. But listen to what Hardesty said about what she thinks she could do.
After so many years of white supremacist activity in a city, of people living in fear because of white supremacist activity and because of the increase in gun violence, we do need to figure out how do we collectively heal. Since COVID, we've learned that we can do things, some things virtually, some things we can do in person. We learn now. I mean, if you'd have told me a year ago I could run City Hall from my couch, I'd have said no way, right? But we've learned that we, in fact, did that for 2.5 years.
Yeah, they did that for 2.5 years, and it worked out so well. And it wasn't white supremacy, Joanne Hardesty. It was Antifa and BLM. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Would you trust your healthcare decision-making to the government? Not me, but I worry that too many people would in exchange for something offered up free. You see, an Oregon task force wants the state legislature to come up with a plan next year, in next year's legislative session, for free universal health care for all. Now, you know, every time the government says something's free, it means the taxpayers are paying for it. But in this case, they're offering no premiums, no copays, no charge for visiting your doctor, and no deductible. If that sounds too good to be true, I think you're absolutely right. It would cost $22 billion in new taxes. If the legislature approves it next year, it goes on the ballot for voter approval or voter dismissal. Now, if you think voters will never sign off on a plan that costs almost as much in a single year as the entire state budget for 2 years costs, I hope you're absolutely right. Remember, a lot of folks don't pay very much in taxes at all. And many of them pay nothing at all. In fact, at least a certain percentage of Americans actually get more money back from the government than they ever pay in. It's called the Earned Income Tax Credit and other benefits. So when they're offered something free and they figure, well, somebody else is going to pay the bill, I think that could get a lot of votes. Then the same folks who run other failing government enterprises like the schools, the unemployment office, the DMV, and the U.S. Postal Service, they're going to be running all of your access to doctors and medicines. What could possibly go wrong? Now, the question I'd like to get the answer to, and maybe you'd like to call it in, maybe you'd like to send it to me by email. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers go first, and emails go to talk. It's easy to remember, talk@LarsLarson.com. But the question I'd love to get an answer to, is Oregon's National Guard being called up to do duty on America's southern border? I've been given to understand they may have been. But as you know, Sanctuary State Kate Brown is not going to talk to me. But have you or your loved ones been called up for National Guard duty? And is the assignment America's open southern border? If the answer is yes, I'd love to know about it. Our official question of the day, was it smart in Washington State to tie the minimum wage to the consumer price index? As usual, the people who make the minimum wage, which is a very small number of workers nationwide, are going to be thrilled by this increase. But the Washington State minimum wage for 2023 will jump to $15.74 an hour in January. That is up $1.25 from what it is now. The 8.66% rise is directly linked to the cost of common goods like housing, food, and medical care, as reflected in the Consumer Price Index. State law directs the Washington State Department of Labor and Industries, that's LNI, to calculate the minimum wage for the coming year based on the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index. In making that calculation, LNI compares the CPI from August of the previous year to the index for August of the current year. Now, I understand, if you happen to make the minimum wage, you're probably thrilled. You say, well, gee, my paycheck's going to go up. That's assuming that the company you work for, which is currently paying you about $14.50 an hour, can afford that increase of $1.25 an hour. If you haven't noticed lately, business is not exactly booming in this economy. And with a recession on the way, you can imagine that a lot of businesses, I've seen surveys that say 50% of American businesses are making layoff plans right now because their income is down, their customers are down, the amount of business they have is down, their labor costs are up, their tax costs and regulatory costs are up. And if you go to those business owners and say, by the way, all the folks that you have who have wages tied to the minimum wage, you're going to be giving them another $1.25 an hour. Do you imagine that some of them are going to say either my business makes no economic sense, it does not have a bottom line, or they're going to say, yes, we're going to stay in business, but we're going to do it with a lot fewer people than we have right now. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
The way has been paved by Trademark Paving. Just pave it. Serving Southwest Washington.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to all the voters who approved Measure 110 and made this possible. Portland man accused of selling cocaine, ecstasy, and ketamine to Cleveland high school students is now facing federal charges. A 42-year-old man was in court last Friday afternoon accused of targeting high school students for drug sales. The investigation began Wednesday, so they got on this one quickly. Cleveland High officials reported that a 16-year-old student was missing. They were concerned about her welfare. Police found the teenager at Powell Park across the street from that school, Cleveland High School, with Jonathan Ash Clark, who had ecstasy, cocaine, and a digital scale in a backpack with him. He is now facing federal charges. Apparently, the 16-year-old girl is safe at this point. This is the consequence of giving de facto legalization to hard drugs. If you said, but it's only going to be for adults. Yeah, sure. Exactly. All the people selling this stuff, they don't care who they sell it to. If they cared about following the law, they wouldn't be selling drugs. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small, collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. I left the signature off this one. Lars, apparently to simply volunteer in a school in Oregon, you must still be vaccinated or have an exemption. These are the same parents volunteering who all just crammed into a gym together for an open house night at the school. 400 to 500 people all breathing the same air, standing shoulder to shoulder. Also, all I hear now is how short-staffed the schools are. It makes zero sense to still require the vaccine. With that established, I'd like to volunteer for many reasons, but also to actually hear what is being presented to my child. As a conservative, I do not trust it. I wish we had the means to homeschool or private school. Those are not options for us. So I was hoping you could share some websites to help me walk through the ways to fill out the exemption forms. I know you've talked about them over the last year. I never needed them till now. I apologize for asking. I didn't need them at the time. I should have written it down. Well, here's the address, and it's very easy to remember. FirstLiberty.org. That's the words first, F-I-R-S-T, not one S-T. FirstLiberty.org. And by the way, I've got no dog in the fight with First Liberty other than my unabashed admiration for the group. I don't get any funding from them. They're not a sponsor on the show or anything like that. But FirstLiberty.org, if you want to get exemption forms. And just a few minutes ago, literally, we found out the U.S. Supreme Court has now turned down an appeal. They struck down Joe Biden's OSHA mandate that mandated the vaccine for companies bigger than 100 employees. But a second case involving medical professionals, the U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear that case. That is bad news. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Coming up, we got to talk about, we're going to talk with Jim Burling from the Pacific Legal Foundation about an Idaho court case that actually went before the Supreme Court today. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails in a bit. As you know, naysayers go to the head of the line. Now, on this show, over the years, I know that you have heard, if you've been a consistent listener, you've heard Michael and Chantel Sackett. They are a couple, and their story, I have to say, it's not them that's bizarre. It's the government that has been acting in a bizarre fashion. But their case has now come today before the U.S. Supreme Court. And all it involved was they found a piece of land where they wanted to build their dream home. That was about 2007. 2007, you know, 15 years ago. And they, you know, put some fill in, put some gravel down and dirt down, and they were ready to build. They had all the permits they needed until the EPA showed up and said, you may not build on your land. In fact, we have to make you put the land back the way it was before you ever came here, because otherwise we're going to charge you, and I think the fee was something like $37,000 a day, because you are putting in danger the waters of the United States. Now, if I got any of that wrong, I know that Jim Burling's going to correct me. He's vice president of legal affairs with the Pacific Legal Foundation, which has been representing the Sacketts all these years. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you again.
I mean, it was my pleasure to talk to this couple, but I had to feel for them. You find a beautiful site to put your dream home, And then the EPA comes in and says, we're going to charge you, you know, a massive, I mean, they were basically being told you'll be hitting $1 million a month in fines if you go ahead with this. And the fight is still going on 15 years later. It came to the court today. Would you mind telling my audience what this is all about and why these people had their right to build on their own piece of land taken away, and their land is not a wetland?
So in 2008, when the EPA visited them and told them, this is a wetland on your property and you cannot build on your property. In fact, we want you to remove all of the fill from the property, plant wetland vegetation, put a fence around it, wait several years, then you can apply for what they call an after-the-fact permit. Now, if you don't do any of this, Lars, you're only partially right. $37,500 per day for violation of the Clean Water Act, plus another $37,500 a day for violating the compliance order that told them to remove whatever fill they had. But the fundamental question has been all these years, was there a wetland there in the first place? Now, the EPA claims that there was, and the Sacketts initially wanted to challenge it. They wanted to go to court and said, we want a judge to determine whether or not there was a wetland here. And the EPA told them no. The Ninth Circuit told them no. So their first visit to the Supreme Court was ended in a 2012 decision saying the Sacketts have a right to challenge this in the first place. So then we went back to federal court, and the EPA went out and collected new evidence, new borings on the property, and then the case sat before the district judge for years. I mean, literally, from the time all the evidence was compiled, which took a few years, the judge took 3 years to determine that, yeah, I think there's a wetland on this property. The Ninth Circuit agreed, and so today we were back at the Supreme Court, and the basic point of our argument is, this is a small area that is not connected in any significant way to a navigable waterway. We're arguing there has to be some real connection that some real person would recognize if they went onto this property. That is more than just a damp spot when it rains, but you have to have a wetland that is really adjacent, i.e. next to a navigable waterway. Here, there is a lake which is somewhat navigable, 300 feet away, across a street and across a subdivision block. So it's you pour water onto their property, it's not going to get into Priest Lake anytime soon, which is a nearby lake. And so we're arguing there ought to be some sort of sanity in determining what a wetland is, and a test is clear enough so an ordinary person can look at it and say, yeah, it's a wetland, I get it, I have to get a permit. Or there's no way this is a wetland. I should be able to proceed to build like the Sacketts should be able to build.
Now, this isn't just an odd case involving a single couple. This effectively means that if the EPA establishes that if your property ever gets wet, if you want a big farm field and the middle of it, you know, when it rains in the springtime and it gets wet for a period of time, for a few weeks or even a couple of months, even though it's not connected to anything else, if the EPA is successful, every single piece of property in America that occasionally gets wet is under the control of the EPA?
And who knows? Because the test is so ambiguous that could well be the case. Now, EPA would tell you, oh, no, we're not that severe. But I can tell you that we have represented farmers who had a little vernal pool totally disconnected to any water of the United States that were subject to millions of dollars in fines, and one of them had to settle for about that amount. I represented a father and son team in Florida at one time where they put wetland, they put clean sand onto land that they thought was not wetland. They spent 18 months in federal prison because it was supposedly a wetland. And then a federal judge came out and looked at the property again and said, I don't think this is a wetland to begin with, after they spent 18 months in prison. So you have a highly ambiguous wetland definition that nobody knows exactly what it is. And as a result, people are subject to huge fines. They're subject to prison time. And if you want to build a house in an area that might occasionally get wet during a rain, are you subject, or are you risking your financial future and possibly your freedom as a result?
I'm talking to Jim Burling. He's a vice president of legal affairs of Pacific Legal. This case has been going on so long that even the late Antonin Scalia played a part in it. And I remember reading, and I reread it today, his definition. He said, look, you've got to have some kind of connection, and it has to be there effectively continuously. So if you've got a stream running across your property that goes into a lake, you say, okay, you could say that area is in some way continuously connected to the lake. But otherwise, you can't do this. And I know the folks who are arguing on the other side of this, the environmental types that want to take the extremes, they're saying why this will take away 51% of the land in the United States that the EPA is trying to control. That tells me the EPA wants control over all those lands, whether they're continuous wetlands or not, whether they're connected to a waterway like a river or a stream or a creek or a lake.
Yeah, the EPA essentially wants to be the federal land manager for every acre of land in the United States. And the wetland law is the way that they're trying to get at a lot of it. And so, yeah, it's an astonishing amount of acreage in the U.S. that they will be able to claim under their supposed rule that comes out of their interpretation of some very ambiguous language in the Clean Water Act. What we're saying is that the definition should be clear. People should have the ability of knowing what they're doing is or is not going to violate federal law. And Congress did not give the EPA the authority to regulate everything. That's what local jurisdictions for. Don't forget, the Sacketts had all the permits they needed from the local government, from the state government, and they thought they were completely complying with the law until they were blindsided by the EPA coming out and telling them that you have a wetland on your property.
Now, Jim, you're a lawyer, so you may not want to go here, but I've got to make a comment. The new justice on the court, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the woman who infamously told Congress that she couldn't define what a woman is because she's not a biologist. Her very first question in this case was, are you telling Congress they can't draw a line to ensure the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters? So apparently the woman who didn't know enough biology to know how to define a woman apparently knows enough biology to be able to safeguard the waters of the United States. That's Jim Burling from the Pacific Legal Foundation. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Keep up the good fight for the rights, the land rights especially, of American citizens. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Charging station. When you can't find one, your EV will not run. You'll have no transportation. The batteries cost a fortune, on average over 10 grand. A bank you'll have to be robbing when gas engines are banned. Tell me, has Newsom gone too far? Electric car, crazy stuff he's talking. If we are still alive in 2035, we'll probably all be walking.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That's our great parody guy, the great Jim Gossett, and welcome to a Monday on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join in the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day. I do want to mention one thing. It's a story that I mentioned last week. It involved a woman by the name of Terry Zinser. She's apparently a street person who decided to walk into a woman's house and go to sleep in her 10-year-old child's bed. And the woman found this woman laying in her bed. She'd been in the backyard and left her front door unlocked. At first, the district attorney refused to bring charges. They did what's called a no complaint. But now, after a public outroar, apparently Multnomah County DA Mike Schmidt Show has decided to bring charges anyway. It turns out that maybe if you're loud enough, maybe if you object enough to some of the crazy things that are going on, maybe you can get district attorneys to act. Glad to be with you. Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Our Twitter poll today, does any state have the right to revoke your rights as a parent and then make decisions for your kids about things like transgender drugs and transgender surgery? The state of California now has a law that says if your kids, say from Oregon or Washington or Idaho, travel to California, that they may seek surgery, transgender drugs, operations, and that the state of California asserts the right that you as a parent have no right to object. They control your child. You can vote in today's Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. To your calls now. Let's start with Mike. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our flagship station, FM News 101 KXL. What's on your mind? You know what? Let's get Mike to a cleaner cell line before we talk to him. Instead, we'll go to Lane. Hey, Lane, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to disagree with you that business wasn't exactly booming in Portland, Oregon.
Is it?
Pardon?
Is business booming in Portland? Because I noticed that rents are down. Buildings are vacant, at least in the inside the city and especially in the downtown area. The drug business on the street seems to be going just fine. And the business of the homeless industrial complex, they've got literally hundreds of millions of dollars to spend, just like Seattle and King County have put hundreds of millions of dollars into that. What business is booming right now, Lane?
Well, I think there's two more, abortion clinics and mortuaries.
And mortuaries. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. But by the way, the abortion business is going to be booming because the powers that be, including Tina Kotek, who's seeking a term as Oregon governor, have decided to put literally $15 million of the people's money in to import women from other states to have their abortions here. So you may be absolutely right. Let's go to Ben. Hey, Ben, thanks for listening in Redmond on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was just calling in about the email that you got earlier about the school, the exemption.
Yeah.
I filled one out. I left everything blank, but I just checked the box for religious exemption and figured that if they had any questions, they would just give me a phone call and we could talk about it. And my wife kind of gave me a hard time because I didn't fill it out. And in the midst of refilling it out, they already emailed me back and said it was approved. So I guess my point is there's all these jobs in the school district, and a lot of these kids need that help. And why can't we just, you know, get those jobs and be the light and just be there for them? And
I think that's a great way to go, Ben. I mean, if simplicity got you the vaccine exemption, good. I'm glad. I guess I'm a bit surprised because the very governments that insisted that you fill out the form to begin with should have simply said, will you get the vaccine? And if you said no, I'll claim a religious exemption. If the government you're dealing with in Redmond is willing to just say, okay, you want a religious exemption, well, granted, we don't make you fill out a bunch of forms and all that. That sounds like a pretty sensible government operation for a change.
Yeah.
But it's not the norm.
Just kind of going through the motions. They're just going through the motions, but I feel like they're a little bit more sensible here than they are on the other side of the mountain. But
it certainly sounds like that. Ben, thanks very much. It's a Monday. It's the Lars Larson Show, and it's the Radio Northwest Network. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to try to supply to you on a daily basis what we have supplied to the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for about 22 and a half. It'll soon be 23 years that we have done, I think, that public service. And if you'd like to jump into the conversation, we make that easy. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our Twitter poll. It's fairly easy to find. And it's really a crazy question. The idea that the governor of one state and the legislature of a state could literally say, we can reach out across state lines and we can abrogate the parental rights of parents. We can tell parents, your kids have come to our state. They are boys seeking to become girls. They're girls seeking to become boys. They want transgender drugs. They want operations. And surgical operations by that. And we're going to strip you parents of your authority because you're on the other side of a state line. Does anybody think that a state has the kind of authority to do that? Does the state of Oregon have the authority to tell Idaho, hey, if your kids come here, then we're going to provide things for them, and we're not going to consult with the parents of those children. This is where government has decided to wage war on American families. And I don't mean that lightly. I mean, they're saying to your kids, we make the decision, you minors make the decision. And we're telling this, or the state of California is telling this, we're not doing it. I wouldn't sign that bill. But they're telling your kids, you're not old enough to decide to drink alcohol. You're not old enough to own a gun. You're not old enough to get a tattoo. But if you come here and you want us to help you change your gender from boy to girl or girl to boy, or I guess to neutral, to non-binary, why, we're going to help you do it, and your parents have absolutely nothing to say about it. Government has for decades been trying to drive a wedge between children and their parents. That is not good for America. It's not good for families. I mean, the point's been made before, and in fact, most recently by the new Prime Minister of Italy, who says the family is the basic unit of society and has been for at least tens of thousands of years, maybe even hundreds of thousands of years, that human beings and families, that is the small, basically basic building block of a society. And now we've got government agents, in this case specifically Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and the state legislature in Sacramento saying, if your child comes from Idaho, Oregon, or Washington, travels to California, which in some cases is not a long trip, and then that child wants to do something that they're not nearly mature enough to do, we will help them do it. You parents have nothing to say about it. So, does any state have a right to revoke your rights as a parent to make the decisions for your underage kids? I would say no to that. You can vote any way you like at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, in Friday's poll from First Amendment Friday, do taxpayers have a right to know what's inside a public employee contract before the contract is signed and a done deal? I said yes, and 76% of you agreed with that. I was stunned that 24% of you say taxpayers have no right to know what's in a public employee contract. Specifically, I was referring to the new Seattle teachers contract, where the union knew what was in the contract, its members knew what was in the contract, the management of Seattle schools knew what was in the contract. The only people who didn't have any clue as to what was inside the contract until it was already signed, it was already a done deal, were the people paying the bill, the taxpayers, the parents. They had no right to know what was in the contract until it was already a done deal and there was nothing you could do to reverse it. I'm kind of stunned that 24% of the people who voted in our Twitter poll think taxpayers have no right to know what's going on. In any case, glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's go first to Tanya, who's listening on the Radio Northwest Network. We've got a great network stretching over the three states. Tanya, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the subject in Idaho, the transgender issue.
Yeah.
That's where, again, it falls with the parents. And what you're teaching your kids at home, because regardless of what they're allowing kids to do in their school, I can guarantee that my son isn't going to come home a girl. You know what I'm saying? Because I know my son and we talk, and he wouldn't do something like that behind my back. That's not, you know, so you got to teach your kids at home right from wrong. And I've always taught my kids, it doesn't matter if you're in a church, a school, your friend's house, you know right from wrong, and just because these people are adults doesn't mean they're doing the right thing.
The only concern, and it sounds like you've raised your child the right way, but Tanya, do you think there's a single parent out there who agrees with, say, their kids taking hard drugs like fentanyl, ecstasy, or anything like that? You think there's a single parent out there saying, yeah, it's okay if my kids do that?
I hope not.
Okay. Now, do you think there are a lot? Second question is, do you think there are still a lot of kids out there taking hard drugs without their parents' knowledge? And even though their parents thought, my kids will never touch that stuff.
Of course.
And I guess built right into the passage of this law by California is the assumption that there are a bunch of kids out there who will do this, who will not consult with their parents. And now the parents are being locked out legally from having anything to say about it. That's why they wrote the law. If they assumed that every kid would automatically go to mom and dad and say, look, this is what I want to do. Will you help me do it? And if you tell me no, I'll listen to the no. California is assuming there are a lot of kids out there who are not talking to their parents about it. And I agree with you. I wish parents had a better relationship with their kids. But I think there are an awful lot of things that kids don't share with their parents. And in fact, I guess I could even ask you, Tanya, were there ever things you did as a teenager that you did not tell mom and dad about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot more than what my kids are getting away with.
and that's what I'm talking about. Tanya, thank you very much for the call. The other question I want to throw out for you to consider, especially here in the Northwest, why have the Seahawks and Starbucks and the Seattle Times fish wrapper, why are they going after U.S. Senate candidate Tiffany Smiley? And I agree with my friend Ari Hoffman, who pointed out that Tiffany Smiley has pointed out that there is an absolute insane level of violent crime, and that something has to be done about it. And he, as he puts it, woke corporations thought they could help Patty Murray by bullying Tiffany Smiley. Why? Because she showed headlines that talked about Starbucks closing stores in Seattle. And all of a sudden, Starbucks and the Seahawks and the Seattle Times have all come out against her. The Seahawks, most especially, they object to the fact that Tiffany Smiley's husband, who's a veteran who lost his eyesight, became the first serving active duty member of the U.S. Army serving while blind. They gave him that Seahawks jersey. And then they object to the fact that he's wearing it in the middle of a campaign commercial. Come on, Seahawks, get out of the politics. Stay on the football field, would you please? You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
And so we have to address this in a way that is about giving resources based on equity.
Based on equity, that is the Vice President of the United States of America, Kamala Harris. And no, she's not the sharpest tool in the shed, but she was talking about the resources coming from the federal government to answer the massive disaster that is Florida after Hurricane Ian. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I got a few things to say about Kamala Harris and what she has said, because what she said is so un-American. It is so illegal. It is just so just plain wrong. We've got to talk about it. But welcome to the program. If you want to jump into the best conversation and talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. So Kamala Harris's first response all the way back to last week, but toward the tail end of the week, was to say that the federal government would prioritize communities of color for relief. Now, The Biden administration has certainly been divisive for the last 18, 19 months that it has existed as a presidential administration. They want to drive a wedge between Americans based on skin color. So what better way to do it than to come in after a hurricane? The estimated losses covered by insurance may be as much as $50 billion. You've got hundreds of thousands of people who still have no power. You have people whose communities have been wiped flat. If you've seen the pictures, places like Fort Myers, where everything is just completely flattened, it is going to be years worth of just replacing the public infrastructure, the roads, the freeways, the bridges. There are literally sections of freeways that were just ripped up by the storm. You've got water systems, power systems, sewage systems that have all been wrecked, are going to have to be rebuilt probably before many people can even rebuild their homes if they were well enough insured. And then here comes Vice President Harris saying, well, we're going to hand out federal help, but it's going to go to you based on what color your skin is. Listen to what she said.
It is our lowest income communities and our communities of color that are most impacted by these extreme conditions and impacted by issues that are not of their own making. And so we have to address this in a way that is about giving resources based on equity, understanding that we fight for equality, but we also need to fight for equity, understanding not everyone starts out at the same place. And if we want people to be in an equal place, sometimes we have to take into account those disparities.
Now, by the way, I would be happy to talk to anybody who thinks that you ought to hand out hurricane relief based on whether or not you have a dark enough skin. Or should you hand it out based on what people need? If your house is still standing, you get some help. If your house has been wiped flat and you have no place to live, if you have no power, if you have no water, if you have no clothing in some cases, you only have what's on your back, you should get a lot of help. It shouldn't matter what color you are. But if you believe otherwise, I'd be glad to take that call at 866-HEY-LARS, because Kamala Harris must, I guess, represent somebody's point of view. Most of the time when she opens her mouth, she's saying something abundantly foolish, like we have a long-standing and great relationship with North Korea. Yeah, right. Thanks, Vice President Harris. You've done such a bang-up job on the southern border since you became border czar more than a year ago. In any case, let's get to your calls. Let's go to Steve first. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking the call, Lars.
You bet.
I was listening in, and one of the things, I was watching a show years ago. It's an international show with a so-called psychiatrist as a show host, and he was talking to two self-professed, and he professed them to be spokespeople or advocates for the LGBTQ alphabet community.
Right.
And one of the things that they were talking about is the difference between gender and sex. And everybody keeps lumping this gender thing together, and I think we would do well to keep the discussion along the lines of proper terminology, even for our own benefit. And that is that gender is a mental construct, sex is a physical construct. And they've even said that. So they've already changed their gender in their head, but they're wanting to change.
Do you agree with that, Steve? I mean, you sound like, based on your name and your voice, the way it sounds, I assume you're male, right?
Oh, I'm alpha male and proud of it.
Okay. Yeah. Now,
I'm Christian, and I'm part Native American. I'm part white.
Oh, okay. Well, I get all that, but Steve, you're telling me that if mentally you decide tomorrow you are a woman, then society should cater to that confusion that you've got, because you're going to say, even though I was born male, even though I've got the chromosomes of a male, I've got the plumbing of a male, in my head I'm a woman, so you have to treat me like a woman. You're saying we should go along with that?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Okay.
What I would say is, just because you feel a certain way about yourself, whether you're heterosexual, homosexual, anything, it's your own business. Don't push me to believe anything. Don't tell me to change my mind.
Except here's where the rubber meets the road, Steve. In Vermont right now, you've got some young ladies who have been kicked out of their school, public school locker room. Do you know why they were kicked out? Because they objected to a man, a boy, underage male, who identifies as female, and he wants to get undressed and shower and everything else he needs to do in the ladies' locker room. And the ladies have said, yep, that's not appropriate. And he's saying, no, you have to do this. And the school has actually kicked them out of their own locker room. And he now gets to use their locker room because he identifies as female. That's where,
correct,
you know,
but
however,
his gender is female. That's what he thinks. But his sex is still male. And his anatomy does not belong.
See, I think you're buying into part of their argument. And I think you're buying into it by saying, well, it's about gender. Do you think your gender is male?
I don't think anything. I am male.
Okay, you are male. In other words, so there is no difference between gender and sex. You're male. You've got male parts. You've got male chromosomes. And whether your head tells you you're female or not, or maybe that tells you that you're Napoleon Bonaparte, it doesn't make you Napoleon Bonaparte, does it?
No. But look, Lars, you're pinning the wrong label on me. I'm saying that this is what they are saying.
Yeah.
They believe that gender is specific to their mental construct of how they see themselves in the mirror. And it confuses it, and it does not align with what they see in the mirror, which is their sex. And what I'm saying is, if we're going to get in discussions about this, then I think we need to use their own language.
No. I think we should.
Mine.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you, because the minute you start to buy into their argument that if mentally you can change yourself from male to female, as soon as you buy into that, they're off to the races. They're saying, well, then let's write laws that back that up. And what you end up with is a bunch of high school girls who are told they've got to go to the locker room and share the showers and the locker room with a biological male because he thinks he's female. That's what happens when you start to buy into that argument. I don't buy the gender versus sex argument. If you're male, you're male. And that's about the end of the discussion. Steve, thanks very much. Good call, though, and good naysayer. Glad to be with you. Glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Glad to get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. I want to ask you this question somewhat rhetorically. Can you imagine if you knew that dozens of times in just the last 6 or 8 months, there had been a physical attacks on a certain kind of institution in America, and that these attacks were happening all over the United States of America? You'd say, well, we know for certain that the FBI would be all over that one, and we know that local police would be all over that one. Well, you'd be right. Unless, of course, you're talking about the dozens of attacks and nearly on so-called pregnancy resource centers, and almost 100 attacks against Christian churches, pro-life pregnancy centers, maternity homes, and pro-life organizations. Well, Reverend James Harden knows all about it. He's CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services, and he joins me now. Reverend Harden, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me again. It's great to be with you.
I understand that thank you for that, Reverend, but I understand that the police and the FBI are not being very cooperative with you, even though you're the CEO who represents the agencies that have come literally under fire, firebombing and other attacks from pro-abortion protesters and extremists.
Yes, you're right. They have been largely asleep. I think back in August that the FBI was slow walking justice. And now I think they're just flat robbing us of equal protection under the law. And by us, I mean pro-life pregnancy centers, over 70 attacks now on pro-life pregnancy centers across the country, ours being one of the most severe. In fact, we had to file a lawsuit to get our video surveillance back from the police department because they refused to even let us see it. And the reason why we don't have a copy of it is because the firebombing was so catastrophically damaging that we didn't have power. So we gave it to them in good faith. And now we're saying, look, our attorneys need this to start prosecuting a case. That's key evidence that we need to identify the perpetrators. And here's the thing. They're saying, no, you can't have it, because they're afraid that it will foment violence from the right,
Hold on. So the FBI is making the argument, if we give you this video back, and if the video ends up being seen by people, that people will be so, and I would say understandably, angry at seeing these kinds of attacks on pregnancy resource centers. That's the understandable part, that they will go out and take part in violence of their own. The part of the argument I don't agree with, that the FBI says you can't have the video because it might provoke a response from people on the right, even though the attacks on the Compass Care Pregnancy Services have been from the left, from pro-abortion people.
Exactly. This is violence being fomented by the left. In fact, it's being fomented by politicians. They're not just abdicating their responsibility to provide equal protection under the law and ensuring that that happens through law enforcement. They're actually joining in the attacks. Like Elizabeth Warren came out saying we need to shut these pregnancy centers down. The senator from Hawaii came out against pro-life legislation. She said this is a literal call to arms. She's talking to pro-abortion people about pro-life people.
That was Mazie Hirono, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, where's the sanction against her? Where's the outcry against that kind of fomenting? The fact that these Jane's Revenge terrorist groups are able to get away with this is emboldening them. They're just continuing to move forward. They're getting a pass. They're literally getting a pass. You can attack pro people all you want, and it's not gonna cost you anything. Well, pro life people they have a fighting spirit, and they're pro life because they believe in the equal value of all human beings because we're made in the image of God. And I said this on June 7th in front of our smoldering medical office. I said, look, we're pro-life because we even value the lives of the people that firebombed us. Now, equal justice is required, right? That's the government's job.
Sure.
But we're not going to retaliate with violence. But this town attorney that's representing the police department who's refusing to give us our stuff back is saying that pro-life people are – he said – this is a quote now – from a town attorney representing the police department who's supposed to be protecting us. And he's referring to pro-life people. He said, you are aware of all the nut jobs out there with guns and AK-47s bombing and killing people because they have certain political views. He's saying that pro-life people are the terrorists. We're not the ones doing that. We're not the ones going around with guns and AK-47s bombing and killing people. That's Jane's Revenge. Jane's Revenge is the Democratic Party's new KKK, and the new cross in the front yard is burning down pregnancy centers, and it needs to stop, and the FBI needs to create a manhunt or be shut down. I've said this before, I think they're either complicit or they're involved in some deeper way. And why
I think
that?
You're right. Reverend, I got to tell you, this is what should stun people, because – you know, with cell phone technology and the tracking technologies of the FBI, the same technologies they used on January 6th to track down who was in the building, who was not, the same technologies they used to go after allegedly the so-called plot against Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. They've used those technologies, but they seem to only use them on the cases they want to use them on. They could easily do it with a case like this, because I'm sure that when they went out and looked at the metadata, they would find some hallmarks of people who are either in the vicinity or looking up information about your pregnancy resource centers and say, well, we should go talk to those people at the very least. They're not doing any of this, to the point where Jane's Revenge, the group you've mentioned, that you and I have talked about months ago, has come out and publicly claimed credit for it with the knowledge, apparently this secure knowledge, that nobody in Congress, nobody in the government is going to do anything about them. They can actually take name credit for it.
Yeah, right. I was talking to a reporter from the Epoch Times named John Ransom, and I was hedging. This was September 19th. It was about a week ago, and we had just filed suit to get our stuff back from the police department. And he said, "Do you think the FBI is complicit?" And I was like, "Well, you know, the rank and file guys are, you know, they're just doing what they're told." And he said, "You know what? Why are you hedging? What's the problem?" I said, "I'm afraid." I'm afraid of repercussions. When you start coming out against the FBI, there's character assassination that looms in your horizon. And that's exactly what's starting to happen now. The FBI is moving from abdicating to attacking. You see that all across the country, like with the Hoke family down in Pennsylvania. They literally put this pro-life leader and his wife and children under the gun for trying to protect his son from, you know, a dirty old man attacking him. So what I don't understand. The situation that we're facing right now, it's dystopian, and I believe, Lars, and I can't prove this, but I believe that the collusion is so significant that the reason why they're not making an arrest is because they're afraid that it's going to draw a line between the dots of the pro-abortion politicians, big tech, and Jane's revenge, and it will swamp all their midterm election aspirations and take power away from them.
And yet, you and I both know the FBI is supposed to take an agnostic view of things. You know, if they have a big case and they have a choice about when to bring it, they can say, we're going to try not to bring it within 90 days of an election. But if you've got terrorists who are engaged in firebombing places, you don't say, well, we're going to time this to make the arrest after the election. Unless you are, as I believe the FBI is, and I believe they are. I believe they're complicit. I believe they're compromised. I believe they said, just as you just said, if we make these arrests and the ties link back to the Democrat Party and some of the highest officials who've called for the end of your centers, then that's going to be trouble for the election. Well, if so, so be it. Act like a law enforcement agency and don't time your arrests or your investigations based on whether or not it helps or it hurts the Democrat Party. That is Reverend James Hardin. He is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Center Services. I've told you I've got no direct dog in the fight, but I've always admired these people. All they do is tell a young woman who's pregnant, the only option is not to abort your baby. You have other options available, and we will help you make those happen. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. There is a story that is broken within the last 60 minutes. Donald Trump is suing the Chicken Noodle News Network, CNN, for defamation. Total damages seeking just short of $500 million. Now, I know you can ho-hum or roll your eyes. The fact is, Trump is suing CNN for defamation. Now, I know that Trump is a public figure, just like I'm a public figure, and the rules are different when it comes to public figures. But if they show, if Trump's lawyers show that CNN said things that were untrue about Trump, that they knew were untrue when they said them, and if there was malice, because that's one of the key parts. In fact, there was a movie way back when called Absence of Malice, and it was a great movie, but it was a long time ago. Maybe they can call the remake of the movie Presence of Malice. Do you think that CNN shows actual malice when it comes to Donald Trump? Now, here's what he's sued on. Now, understand, I know defamation law reasonably well for a non-attorney. I know that if I go on the air and I say something about somebody that I know isn't true, I can be sued for defamation. Even if the person I'm talking about is a public figure, and public figures have less protection against defamation than people who are not public figures. So public figures include people who are in the news a lot, people who are elected officials, celebrities of one kind or another, that you have to show that there was actual malice. That the person who made the false statements made them knowing they were untrue and made them because they intended to do you in. Now, here's the case he's making. And again, the case has been filed in federal court. $475 million in damages sought by Donald Trump in his lawsuit against CNN. The story, as I said, broke within about the last hour. CNN has attempted to taint Trump, according to the suit, with a series of more scandalous, false, and defamatory labels of racist. He's not. Russian lackey. Well, take a look at the Mueller report. Not. Insurrectionist. And that's one of the key charges, is that Trump is saying, look, you've called me an insurrectionist. The government has not brought charges of insurrection against Donald Trump. Even the FBI, in the conclusion of its investigation of the January 6th event that they released last summer, about a year ago, they concluded Donald Trump had nothing to do with the planning or the execution of what happened on January the 6th. They have called him an insurrectionist, and ultimately they have described him as being like Hitler. Well, Hitler is one I even stay away from, unless you're talking about somebody who's a mass murderer. Trump wants $475 million in damages. I would imagine that's more than CNN is worth right now because they don't have much of an audience. But here's part of what the suit says. Beyond simple highlighting any negative information about the plaintiff and ignoring all positive information about him, CNN has sought to use its massive influence, purportedly as a trusted news source, to defame the plaintiff, that's Trump, in the minds of its viewers and readers for the purpose of defeating him politically, they're going to make the case that CNN is trying to keep Donald Trump from running for president in 2024. And I know that some of you who don't like Trump, I happen to like Trump, will say, well, you know, that's crazy. Well, let me tell you what crazy is. We're 2 years out from a presidential election. Donald Trump at this point, according to the polls, would win the Republican nomination by 71% of the vote. Now, 2 years is a long time, but still in all, to the summer of 2024, we're talking about a fairly short period of time. And if he's already at about 71%, if CNN is actively working to try to torpedo Donald Trump, and they're doing it by saying false things about him with malice, he might just end up owning the Chicken Noodle News Network. Let's go to Ron in Tacoma. Oh, hold on a second. We've got a naysayer, and I always go first. Let's go to Steve, who's a naysayer. Steve, you better make this one good. What do we disagree about today?
Well, you say that Trump isn't a racist, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so what if, and just hypothetically, what if Donald Trump sent out a tweet saying something like, there won't be another black president for generations because of Barack Obama? What would you call that?
I wouldn't call it racist. I'd say it's a political opinion. There are lots of political opinions
Hold on.
Why is that racist?
Why would no other black person, no other black Republicans, why would Barack Obama reflect upon them? Why would Barack Obama reflect upon, say, any black candidate?
Other Harvard graduates, let's say.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because he was heralded, hold on, Steve, I'm answering.
I guess you don't want to hear the answer to your question.
I do want your answer.
All right.
I do.
Okay, the answer is because Barack Obama was hailed by the people who supported him as the historic first black president of the United States. And there were an awful lot of black Americans who turned out to vote who had not voted in previous elections, but said, I've got the opportunity to vote for Barack Obama. I'm going to vote for this man. And they expected big things from him. And
you're
the overall.
It.
Go ahead.
You're dodging it.
No, I'm not dodging it. I'm saying Barack
Obama. The statement was about black presidents, no other black presidents for generations. So tell me, how does Herman Cain lose his ability to be president because of Barack Obama?
He doesn't. And I like Herman Cain. I happen to know Herman Cain pretty well. And I like Herman Cain. But what Donald Trump said was not racist. He said, look, America elected its first black president. And they all patted themselves on the back saying, this is a great thing. And then Barack Obama did jack for minorities in America. And an awful lot of black Americans were disappointed in him saying, we should choose presidents not based on their skin color, but based on the content of their character. I happen to believe that Barack Obama has no character, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk Radio. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter, you can go to my website and vote there. It's LarsLarson.com. Now, I've confessed to you that I only went to college for a short period of time, about a year and a half, and I've never really looked back. I've taken classes since then. But if you're worried when you send your son or daughter, or I guess non-binary child, if you've got one of those, off to college, and you're worried about the kind of liberal indoctrination they're going to get, I think you should be worried about it, because you should be aware that most of those colleges are populated with a lot of very liberal people. And even colleges that try to hew to a conservative tradition are under attack right now. And that's one of the cases I wanted to talk about with my friend Ari Hoffman. He does the afternoon talk show on our great affiliate station in Seattle, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Ari, welcome back to the program, or welcome to the program, I should say.
Pleasure to be here, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Now, I said to you that I'd been talking about this case involving Yeshiva University. I have no connection there either. I'm not Jewish. You are. But I've had the problem that over the last few months we've been following this as gay groups or LGBTQ groups have been going after the university because apparently they say we need to have a student LGBTQ club, even though the very beliefs of the people in that club conflict with the university itself. And I've always wondered why anybody who's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer would want to go to a university that's based on religious beliefs that say all of that is wrong. I mean, let's start right there. And you have a confession. You went to Yeshiva. Is that right?
I did. I am still one credit shy of graduating, and I have not taken any classes since. So that's me. But yeah, I did go there for 3 years. And when I was there, of course, there were people who were gay. But the thing was that they had their clubs, but they weren't sanctioned by the school. They were off campus or they were in dorm rooms or whatever it was, but they weren't part of the school curriculum. They did have forums from time to time discussing the role of the LGBTQ, however many alphabet letters there are these days, in the community, but it wasn't something that was sanctioned by the school. Occasionally they would have these forums where they'd bring in rabbis to discuss back and forth on it. They would do that, and those were sanctioned by the school. But the reason they're after acceptance by Yeshiva University, well, people don't understand, it's not just a college over at Yeshiva University. This is also where they train rabbis. And this is where, if you're going to hire a rabbi for an Orthodox synagogue in America, odds are they come from one of just a few very prestigious yeshivas. And this is one of them. Yeshiva University trains the best of the modern Orthodox rabbis across the country. And if you're going to end up working in a synagogue like mine or hundreds of others across the country, you're going to get your rabbinical degree from this college. They want to be able to say, see, we broke them, because this is where people go to for their religious guidance. And if they accept us, you have to accept us. So this is really the goal towards, well, now your synagogue has to do gay marriages. That's what this really comes down to.
Now, all of this is aimed at forcing institutions that have a set of beliefs that they're allowed, they're not just allowed, they're protected in those beliefs in the First Amendment, saying you can have what religious beliefs you want. And unless your actions become criminal, you can believe whatever you want. And they want to go in and use the power of government. That's why they're going to court on things like this, to force a university like Yeshiva to bow to the will of the LGBTQ crowd and effectively give up their beliefs. I mean, that's the way I see it. I don't know if you'd see it that way as well.
I see it the same way. I mean, what's the difference between having a club that's sanctioned by the school and a club in the local coffee shop or a club in wherever else it is? There's nothing whatsoever except you want that acceptance. But let's put this the other way for a second. Let's say I went to a Jesuit university or I went to a Catholic university and I said, I need you to make sure you have kosher food for me. And they're like, well, we don't keep kosher and that's a huge expense for us. And then I sue them for it. That's not because I want it. I want the food. That's because I want them to accept my style of life. What if I say, I'm suing because I don't want to have class on my Sabbath because I chose to go to your university. That's on me, not on them. Why should they have to change the way they practice their beliefs in order to accommodate mine? I know what I'm getting into if I was to sign up for a Catholic school, if I was to sign up for a Jesuit school or any other religion for that matter.
Well, and that's the concern I've got, because parents want their kids to be educated. I assume that's the reason they're sending them to university. You know, if the parents are supporting, you know, their son or daughter's trip to university, fine. They may support them financially. They might support them philosophically. But they say, I'd like to see you get some additional education. Fine. Nothing wrong with that. But having to send your kids off to an institution and say, but I have to accept that all of the institutions with different values will have those values driven out by force of law, by lawsuits brought by activist groups who don't even share the beliefs and the tenets of the very institution they're trying to join.
Right. And what you see happening right now is just look at the public schools. You have a lot of parents who are saying, you know, maybe it's time to go back to our roots. We're going to go to private school. We're going to go to a religious private school because of what's going on in the public schools. My son is of college age. He is going to school in Israel this year because I don't want him around the American college ideology. I don't want him around the anti-Israel insanity, which is on most secular college campuses. And even at a place like Yeshiva University, if you're having this fight going on and they're trying to break Yeshiva University, which was considered, for lack of a better word, a safe place for Orthodox observant Jews to go, whereas a lot of colleges in America are not anymore. They're not safe for Asians either. They're not safe for other minority groups. You got to ask yourself how many places are really, really left. The left will not stop until they break every single one of these institutions because they want the monopoly on your kids. And they're so committed to not having any kids of their own or getting rid of the next generation, whatever way that is, through all the things that they're doing, they want your kids. So for somebody like me who says, I want my kid to be able to go to a place where he can go to university, and at the same time, he can keep everything that's sacred to my religion, this is just the first step. It's not about the LGBTQ thing. It's going to be, and what's next? And what's next? At this place, they don't have a club for the people who don't keep Sabbath, and there's plenty of those. They don't have a club for the people who don't keep kosher, and there's plenty of people like that. But this is about breaking the thing that is seen as the pinnacle of Orthodox Judaism in America.
So one of the biggest drivers that led Europeans to come to this continent was religious freedom. And they said, we're going to make sure that we never lose it. We're going to put it in the Constitution. We know that the right to religious freedom and freedom of expression and all the other in the Bill of Rights are from God, but we have to make sure the government never gets involved in trying to restrict those or overrule those rights, and we'll put it in the Constitution. And they did all that, and now we're seeing these groups that have managed to turn the courts and turn other government institutions against the idea that you can have different beliefs. That's Ari Hoffman. He's on our great affiliate station in Seattle. That's Talk Radio 570 KVI. Love to take a naysayer on this one. Should a university have to cow to organizations that come in and demand that any university or any public school or private school must kowtow to the beliefs of a particular group, even when those beliefs run directly counter to the beliefs of the university itself? Doesn't make any sense to me. 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. Our Twitter poll today, does any state have a right to revoke your rights as a parent and then make decisions for your kids? California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a bill into law that allows the state of California to revoke out-of-state parents' rights over so-called trans kids. The legislation allows California to take, quote, temporary emergency jurisdiction over a child that travels to the state for transgender drugs or operations and strips the parents in another state of their authority. Now, do I suspect this one's going to go to court? Yes, I do. Do I think that they're going to win on this one? No, I don't. But I want to ask you, as parents, the idea that any state could reach out and say, if your child comes to our state, we have charge of that child, we make the decisions for that child, and you do not, ought to be outrageous to just about anybody, and I'd love to hear the naysayer who says otherwise. If you want to join that conversation, just dial me up at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and let's go to Randy. Hey, Randy, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, I was just wondering what's up with this Joe Kent guy. I don't know much about him. I've heard him on your show a couple times. So I'm just wondering, you don't see any ads, don't see any really much news about him at all. This other lady, man, she's all over the news, and I'm wondering, are we getting clowned by this guy, or what's
no,
the deal?
No, you're getting clowned by the other person. And let me, you're getting my point of view, right? But I'll try to make this sort of down the middle as possible. The woman he's running against, Marie Glusenkamp Perez, is a far left-wing Democrat. She demonstrates that by talking about the issues, and she, I think, has almost no chance of winning in the 3rd congressional district in Washington State because the 3rd is a center-right district. You know, it's not hard right, it's not hard left, but it's pretty much down the middle and slightly to the right. That gives Joe Kent a great way to go. He's got his military experience behind him. He served not just successfully and honorably, but he served in huge success that he saw, and you can see that in the medals that he earned as a member of the U.S. military. Ms. Perez is tied to an automotive repair shop in Portland that she co-owns with her husband, where they offered tune-ups for the motors of the leaf blowers that Antifa was using during its riots in downtown Portland. Yeah. So you know where she's coming from. The fact that you see somebody... Go ahead.
That's the problem I have, is that this is the first time I'm hearing this. I did read a little bit online that, you know, she's based out of Portland, that she's not a Washington person.
They make their home in Southwest Washington. She has a business in Portland. There's nothing wrong with that. There are lots of people who drive into Portland from Southwest Washington, but my objection to her is offering aid and comfort to a bunch of terrorists in the form of Antifa. Right. And then
that's what my point is. I'm just now hearing this, like, on your show today, the first time I've heard that.
Well, we talked to Joe Ken about it last week, and we've talked to Joe almost every single week, once a week, for the last 5 months. Maybe 6 months,
right.
And we've offered to let Ms. Perez come on the show and let her explain her point of view. She has declined. We've had Heidi St. John on the show. We've even had Jamie Herrera Butler, the Rhino Republican, who used to occupy the spot and still does at this point. She doesn't leave office till January of next year, but she'll be replaced by either Joe Kent, which I think is the right choice, or Marie Gluzenkamp-Perez, which I think would be a crazy choice.
I think the bottom line for me is I would wish that, you know, this guy would get on top of it, not even make this a race. I shouldn't even be having to think about this lady right now.
Randy, how do you do that when you're at the mercy of the voters? In other words, anybody who takes a political race for granted and says, look, I've laid out the case, people will just vote for me. Those people tend to lose elections. So it's going to be, should stay in the thick of it. And when you don't see a lot of commercials are still expensive, whether they're on radio, television, and the fact that you're not seeing them, Randy, I don't know how much they're spending on money to run ads on conventional TV. 20 years ago, that would have been very common, that if you were running for Congress, you'd run a lot of TV ads, but there were basically half a dozen TV channels that you'd focus on, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and maybe one or two others. These days, social media allows you to target advertising to such a great extent. Randy, would you call yourself a conservative?
Very.
Okay. Let me tell you what they do. If she's looking for Democrat votes, she's probably talking to the folks who place her advertising. And if they place it on social media in the places most likely to have people who are liberally inclined, they're the kind of places you're not going to see her ads. There's so much. I guess, fragmentation of media these days. I mean, like I said, it used to be there was a newspaper or two in every town. There were half a dozen TV stations representing the major networks, and that was about it. These days, you can target people for advertising through thousands of different mechanisms. I mean, whether it's social media, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, there's some print. In fact, I got a Marie Gluzenkamp-Perez mailer because I put my name in for a lot of things so I can read what these people are saying, and they target those as well. So they say, well, if we're going to send to this group of people in this area who have this kind of political background, we hit them with a different appeal than we hit somebody else, and they target the advertising that way as well. Does that make sense?
I'm glad you finally told me what her last name is. I've been running around thinking it was glucosamine.
Yeah. It's Gluzenkamp. And frankly, I would love if she would agree to come on the show. I mean, I'm not going to tell her that I'm going to agree with her, but I'd be polite, and I would politely ask her a lot of questions, like, should Americans be satisfied with inflation running at a 40-year high? Should Americans be satisfied paying gasoline prices that are $1.50 to $2 a gallon more than they were when Joe Biden took over? Should Americans be happy to be forced to buy an electric car because they won't have the choice? I mean, some of those basic questions.
Exactly.
And if she's not capable of answering those questions, she should just say, I'm not capable of answering them, at which point you've disqualified yourself. If you're going to be a member of Congress and you can't answer ordinary questions on your point of view about those kinds of things from people, whether they're sympathetic to your point of view or not, I think every candidate should go out and face tough questions, because if they don't, when they get back to Washington, D.C., they're going to very much be under the gun, because their own party is going to say, you have to get behind this. And if you don't have nerves of steel and a really strong backbone, you'll probably cave in. Randy, thanks so much. I appreciate the call. Back in just a moment. You're listening to A Monday on the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and I'll get back to those in just a moment. But I've been looking forward to talking to Scott Cleland, who is executive director of the Restore Us Institute, which has to do with the internet and trying to protect people from both the crimes and the other abuses they may suffer at the, I guess if you'll have it, the hands of the internet. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
I want to ask you about this because the internet is a tool that I use every single day. I mean, when I'm working, even when on my days off, I use it as a great, and I've thought of it as the greatest research tool out there. But it also comes with a lot of caveats, that it has a lot of bad information in it as well, and it has some bad actors in it as well. Is that basically what the Restore Us Institute is trying to get after, is making sure that people don't fall victim to this new piece of technology?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we know there are good and bad people. We know there is a sin nature. And the utopian 1996 internet policies, I call them internet unaccountability policies. Some people know them as Wild West policies. But there are so many great things the internet's done. But the policy of the United States was to ignore, basically, there was a downside or there was a problem, that there would be bad actors. So literally, the policy assumes only good things. And what we're all about is restoring constitutional accountability and authority to the U.S. internet in U.S. policy.
All right. So if you want to restore constitutional authority in America, everyone can sue anyone they want to sue. Now, the suit may be thrown out if it's not well-founded. But it turns out that a big part of the internet effectively earned itself or obtained for itself protection from being sued. And as a result, the internet, some of the biggest actors, the social media actors on the internet, have said, we can put anything we want up. We can filter whatever we want. We can decide what information people get to see based on our own politics. And we can decide what information people don't have any access to. And we can't get sued.
Exactly the problem. I've been fighting that for several years, kind of ahead of the curve on that. And the problem simply is that offline, we know we have freedom of speech, but we know there's certain things you can't do. You can't incite. You can't, cry fire in a theater. You can't perjure. So there's all sorts of things we know in established law. On the internet, basically, and that it, remember, it's not just a communications network. It's a conduct conduit. People do everything on it. And there is free speech absolutism. They haven't carved out what is illegal speech online. And so terrorism now, they're going to have to look at and say, I mean, funding terrorism, can we all agree that that should be illegal? I mean, like Hamas and some other ones like this. But there are clearly, if you put a hit out on somebody, that should be illegal. So what we're asking for in restoring constitutional authority is same rules, same rights, offline, online, equal protection under the law. And if it's illegal offline, it should be illegal online. Just common sense.
How do you go about policing that, though? Because, Scott, I've talked to prosecutors before, And I've asked him about the giving material aid to terrorist organizations. I mean, because of 9/11 and everything that's happened since, you know, there have been charities in this country that have raised money and have also raised other resources for terrorist groups. And I asked a prosecutor once, I said, what do you have to do to run afoul of that? He said, give any material aid or comfort. I said, if you put together first aid kits, you know, for ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist organization, would that be enough? He said, that would be enough for you to violate the law. You can't do that. And yet, how do you go about policing that when people are doing it on the internet?
Well, and that's the thing right now, is that people have come to believe and know that if it's done on the internet, it's like a get out of jail free card. And it shouldn't be, but it is. And so the whole notion here is we have a problem that is out of control in every dimension. If you just ask me a question about any segment, I can tell you how it has affected that segment. And if we don't restore rule of law, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, sovereignty back, if we allow this area to basically be anarchy, approved anarchy online on autopilot, is the problem.
Well,
and so if you have a breakdown in society, we already are seeing it.
I guess, Scott, here's where I see the problem. When you said you can't get away with lying, well, you can. I mean, there are people who give political speeches on behalf of a candidate. And if you do it from a stage, even if you do it on the radio, you can say things that aren't true. Now, I care about my credibility, so I tell people, double check what I say. If you don't believe me, I'll back up what I'm saying. But I'm doing that as a publisher. That's how they view talk radio or television or newspapers. But on the internet, you can say false things about people and get away with it, except your reach is potentially hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, and there's almost no way to have any accountability there. So how do we go about policing that?
Well, the point you're making is when you're talking about free speech, it's the courts that decide that ultimately. But the courts so far haven't determined what is protected speech and unprotected speech. And so that's one of the first things we're trying to do is, and currently is encourage the judicial system to adapt, because we want to encourage free speech. But what I'm trying to say is that people focus on maybe 5-10% of the problems and they think it's all about free speech. What we're about is the 90% of conduct that doesn't get any it isn't focused on. Like, for example, 100,000 Americans died last year from fentanyl poisoning.
Right.
Where do they get it? 90% plus, I think it's 97% of online pharmacies are illegal. Now, there's a lot of stuff that can be done there.
Now, you'd think that would be something that you could actually police, because if you're selling pharmaceuticals online, you've got to do it legally. I mean, if I go on and write an essay, I'm not selling pharmaceuticals, I'm just engaging in free speech. But if I decide to sell a product and the product is not legal for me to sell, how is that so hard to police?
Well, the thing, if I may make the point is, what RestoreUsInstitute.org is about is, we're not trying to be the 10,000th voice on the free speech thing. We're
right.
The only ones that is focused on the other 90 to 95% of the problems that are being ignored. They're not being ignored in specifics. People are working on each one of those problems. We are the only one that is working together, saying, what we know is there's one universal cause to all of the internet problems, and that's internet unaccountability policy. And no one right now is focusing on that common sense problem. If you know the problem and you know the cause, you can know the cure. And so on the free speech, those are many times very difficult and won't be solvable. But the thing is, big tech has us chasing our tail, fighting among each other, clawing each other's eyes out, so nobody's focused on the other 90% that is harming, that is crime, and in many cases is killing Americans.
Well, in fact, the internet companies that say we'll let you put an ad up to sell fentanyl or sell other pharmaceuticals, and then that should be on the internet company. If they're going to make money on that transaction, then they should only allow people who sell on their internet site to be selling legal products or selling them in a legal way, right?
We totally agree. That's what we're all about. I've been doing this for several years, It is, I call it mindless madness. We have five administrations for 13 Congresses and 17 Supreme Court justices who have neglected to protect the American people for from crimes and harms online for 25 years.
And it's probably about time that the Congress got busy, because they are the ones who write the laws for this great country. That's Scott Cleland, who is executive director of the Restore Us Institute. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers go first, and send emails to talk@LarisLarsen.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and this segment is brought to you by Valhalla Tea Company. It's made by veterans to help veterans by donating $1 from every bag sold at ValhallaTea.com. That's ValhallaTea.com. Our Twitter poll question, does any state have a right to revoke your rights as a parent and make decisions for your kids? I know it sounds like a crazy question, but it's exactly what California has just done. Last Friday, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill that allows the state to revoke your rights over your kids. If your kids travel to California and your child says, I'm a trans kid, I want to be made from a boy into a girl or a girl into a boy, a child that has traveled to the state of California for transgender, drugs, or surgical operations, well, your parents are stripped of any authority they have over you. The state of California takes what they're calling temporary emergency jurisdiction over your child. I think that's crazy, but you can answer the question any way you like. At Lars Larson Show, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Wendy, and if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-439-5277. Wendy, welcome to the program, and thanks for listening on the network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I was just listening when you were talking to Ari, and it brought to mind when those the girls wanted to be able to get into the Citadel, the all-boy college. And they took it to court, and they won that right. And then, of course, they failed out miserably. But
But they got the chance to fail, didn't they? Well, let me ask you this, Wendy: if an organization says these are the criteria we want for you to be a member of the organization, the crazy thing to me over the years has been there have been all men's clubs. I've never been a member of one. But they're all men's clubs. There was one in the Northwest called the Arlington Club. It was all men, and only men were allowed in the club. It was driven out of existence by women's rights people who said, no, you can't have an all men's club. On the other hand, there is still to this day an all women's club known as the Town Club, which is only open to women. And I guess once or twice a year, they will have an event where the women are allowed to bring a male guest to the club. But then there are women-only gyms. I don't know of any male-only gyms, but there are women-only gymnasiums, and the women say, well, you know, we want to go be able to work out in a place where there aren't all these, eyeballs that belong to men. So, yeah. You know, that's one thing. But what happens when there's an institution, in this case that university, that says, we don't believe in being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or otherwise? If that's the case, why would somebody who is LGBTQ want to be part of a university that doesn't hold that as one of its beliefs?
You know, and that was my question way back when these gals wanted to get in the Citadel. It been in, I don't know how long the Citadel had been around.
A long time.
Why would you want to go there?
Well, yeah. Wendy, I could make the argument. I don't know the stats for the Citadel, but it's a military school. And I understand mm-hmm. that an awful lot of young men who've gone there have gone on to great, you know, they go into the military, they've got a background that is not like any other, and they often see a lot of success. I could see the argument from women saying, if there were a female analog to that, where you say, when women go here, they come out, they go into the military, or they go into, say, the service academies, Annapolis and West Point and all that, that they're much more successful. I think they were saying, we want access to that, because going to that school tends to lead to success in a way that going to any other school does not. I could see why they want to belong to the group. But what if you said, we want to have a university that only believes in Christian values, doesn't believe in abortion, doesn't believe in all these other things. And I would say, okay, that sounds pretty good to me. And you say, now, a group comes in and says, we want to force them to become pro-abortion. Why do you want to join a group that you disagree with just to force the group to change its beliefs? Because there, we're not talking about the gender of the person who goes. We're talking about the beliefs, right?
Right. I don't get it.
In some ways, Wendy, it would be like if a bunch of conservative friends and I said, let's find the most, you know, crazy left-wing environmental organization in America. I don't think it's the Sierra Club, but say it was like the Sierra Club. And you say they don't believe in cutting trees. They don't believe in drilling for oil. They don't believe in using energy. So let's get enough of our members to join their group. And then we're going to take over the group and change all of their stances on all those things, like cutting trees and drilling for oil, so that they match ours. Well, why do you want to do that? Why? And it's kind of a perverse thing to do, I think, to say, and I'm not talking about sexual perversity. I'm saying it's perverse right. to say, I want to join a group that doesn't believe as I believe, so I can make them believe as I do. That's a real narcissistic point of view for me.
Exactly. And I don't understand why you'd want to, you know, spend that time and energy other than, you know, to get your point across to, you know, a couple people. But it's just, it's, you know, kind of, I don't really want to say stay in your lane, but it's kind of, you know, you want to associate with people that are like-minded. And why would you even want to put yourself through that headache?
I think the only reason they want it is they want to force other people to believe as they do. And that's about as un-American an idea as I can ever imagine. It's a Monday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.